Blog Talk Radio.
Watching you as you're dreaming, the dreams I thought I knew. Your smile shows the reason I watched it all come true. Your touch is cold and distant, and I still loving you. I'm walking down.
Under the umbrella of allpoetry.com, the largest poetry group in the world. And we are on Blog Talk Radio every night with different hosts and different topics. And we have our leader and creator of these programs, Deborah Lee, to thank. And so I give her thanks. And I'm glad that you've all decided to tune in and listen to the show tonight. And we have a caller already. Just let me get to it here.
Unmuted. I'm not a caller.
You're not a caller. This is Hatter. How are you? And that was actually Hatter's song that you heard at the beginning of the program. He wrote the lyrics to that, and Shout Even Shy wrote the music and sang it. And it is a beautiful song. And someday it's going to win an award because I just think it's fabulous. So how are you, Hatter?
I'm okay. A little hot.
Yeah?
California. Yeah.
Yeah, I called you a little while ago, but you didn't answer your phone. I don't know if you saw it ring or not, but
I dozed off.
Okay. So tonight we're going to hopefully have some fun with these bits of pieces of mysterious history bits, and I'm still in the process of trying to. I'm almost finished mine, but I'm hoping that I'll get it done before the end of the show. So,
yeah.
Well, with saying that, I'd like to say that it's interesting to know that there were some really funny things happening in the past many years of our world. And I'm just got a little note here that I'm not sure what happened here. So I'm just going to tell you I'll give you a couple of the topics that people were able to write to. And I wrote to this one, and it's after World War I, the Australian military started the Great Emu War, where they tried to cull emus with machine guns. And 6 days after their first engagement, 2,500 rounds of ammunition had been fired and no emus were killed. It was declared as an emu victory in the end. So that was pretty funny, I think. And and then this second one, I'm just going to read the prompts that had her, okay? In the entire state of Ohio in 1895, there were only two cars on the road. And the drivers of these two cars crashed into each other. Now, that's pretty funny, I think, going that with a great big state and then two cars on the road and they happen to have an accident. So then here's a kind of a cute one. The first mooning in recorded history was 66 A.D., where a Roman soldier mooned a pilgrim on their way to Jerusalem. This caused a riot and over-response by the Roman military and the death of thousands. Well, that's not so funny, but it's odd. Odd, funny, odd. And on it goes. There's like 10 of them, I think. And let me see. There
that's
were a lot of different...
That's moon on a pilgrimage. Yeah.
Okay, here's a really good one, too. Here's one. These are true stories, okay? Between the announcement of Germany's surrender during World War II on the radio to Joseph Stalin, addressing of the nation 22 hours later, Russia literally ran out of vodka. Wow. I don't know what would ever happen to that. That was a biggie, wasn't it? So what do you think of the mysteries of history there, you know? Mr. Hatter?
Oh, I'm sorry. What was the question again?
I'm just asking, like, what do you think? There's some odd, funny, odd things that happened in the history of the world, and these are some of them. What do you think of? Can you think of something outside of what I posted for prompts?
Well, there was a guy, Nicholas, I can't remember his last name. He was Russian. He was on duty during the Cold War, during the thick of things, like in the 50s, I believe, late 50s, that there was a glitch in the matrix or in the software. What Russia was looking at was a full-scale nuclear missiles being fired at Russia. And he was the one with the power to pull the trigger to retaliate. And he was... took it in faith that the United States had not, in fact, attacked Russia because their radar had malfunctioned somehow, and it showed many nuclear missiles heading for Moscow, and it didn't happen. So being that he was on the other side of the Cold War and decided to not fire back, prevented World War III, just one guy. So thank you, Nikolai.
Wow. How interesting. Now, I'm going to try to see if I can. Did you want to read your poem first to get us started?
Yeah.
Or you want
okay.
to chat for a bit?
To do that. No, get that, get me out of the way, because I don't know how long I can stay tonight. I'll stay as long as I can.
Okay. Let me get your poem then.
Okay, thank you.
So,
what's the temperature like in Nova Scotia? What island are you actually on?
What's that?
New Brunswick? Are you in New Brunswick or what?
I am in New Brunswick. Yeah, in New Brunswick.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Where are you? There you are.
There I be. I wrote to the one where country goes to war, and when the war's over, they come home. There's more people that came home than went. I thought that was.
Oh yeah, that was a good one. I liked that.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm putting yours in the room. And Budo's out in the lounge there. And hi, Budo. And here, Heather, you there? It's in the room there now for you.
Okay, called When All Comes Home. Goes like this: The war began on an unknown day. Scores are dead, I heard them say. Services planned for the dead and maimed. No list was found to call the names. So they counted the men that fought this war. All came home, plus one more. There was no battle anyone heard. 'Twas made to save by the vocal word. No one speaks of wars unknown. It's a victory declared when all comes home. So on an unknown day, they celebrate an unknown war that was won. No blood was spilled on the battlefield, nor was there a smoking gun.
Excellent. And again, you know, your superb rhyme and rhythm were perfect. And I thought this was a really interesting one, too, because, like you said, they all came home plus one more. They had a, hang on, where is it now?
Yeah, they had a little Italian friend come home with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I come with you?
Let me see, what does it say exactly? There was, I'm trying to find it here, hang on. We're always hanging on, eh? Oh yeah, it says here, during the French Revolution, when members of the Third Estate stormed the Bastille, they freed a grand total of 7 prisoners. They were the only ones in there at the time. Oh no, that's not the right one, I'm sorry.
It's got a short little definition.
None of the 80 soldiers sent were injured, and 81 returned, including a new Italian friend. So that was an interesting little tidbit. Just going to go check the room here again to see. Okay. So, you know, it would be interesting to see some sort of a book created from soldiers' memories of the different weird and odd things that happened in during the wars, and you know there had to be some levity on one level or another, and but I just want to read you a little bit about well I could maybe do that after.
Remember the big group battle we had several years ago. Took about a year to finish. There was 15 groups participated.
Okay, right,
I was one of the creators and the head judge. My creating part was I had to do the narration of the battlefield, what the battlefield looked like after each round. And in doing that, I created some of the contests, the mini contests that we had. So I got to look up the history of weird and strange things that had happened during wartime.
Can you bring that up and share it with us?
Yeah.
Or some of it, or one or two of
I can tell you about it. What I was not a participant in the contest. I was a judge, so there was, I have no rights in the pieces that I wrote. But in my research, I came across a very interesting and remarkable situations. One was the Angel of like Mariel Heights. This was a, he was a conscientious objector. He refused to carry a gun.
And I remember him.
It was, yeah. Now he, during, and this is during the Civil War. So the,
okay.
North and South are battling, and they did it really methodically back then. To where at night, the battlefield was left with the wounded and dying on the field of battle. And at dusk and at dawn and during the night, this this conscientious objector would go out into the battlefield carrying water and would give what relief he could to wounded, the enemy and his side. So he's called the Angel of Mariel Heights, and it gives
wow.
the explanation. My feelings. The other one was the two companies that were in World War One. I think it was World War One or Two. I think it was World War One. They put down their arms on Christmas Eve and played soccer, exchanged gifts, cigarettes, chocolate, and such during on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, and then they went back to war the next day.
Wow. Isn't that something?
It is.
That was, yeah.
There's hope.
Yeah, because people that are fighting the actual wars don't want to be there either, do they?
Oh. And there's one story. I didn't see the movie. There's one story. I guess it's a book and a movie about the guy that he's another conscientious objector. What he did, he saved a countless amount of men hauling one by one up these cliffs. And I don't know the details, but I know it's a remarkable story, and I don't know if it's part of included in Private Ryan or if it's some movie like
that.
No,
that was the one that I was thinking you were going to tell us about, and that was a conscientious objector, and it was during the Second World War, and he refused to carry a weapon, and they crucified him in basic training and really were unmerciful to him. And he asked to be a medic so that he could help the ones on the field. And what happened was they had to go up this flat-faced cliff, and I'm not sure, I can't recall the place, but they were fighting the Japanese at the time. And there was a troop of people up there that ended up getting trapped, actually. And so they were trying to escape, and they were killed by the dozens. But this young man, at night, he was able to go amongst he thought were the dead and find those that were still living. And made slings and some out of ropes and stuff to lower them down to safety. These were the injured, and he went through the
down
night.
Down or up?
Down.
Was it down
they
or
were
up? It was down. Okay.
Down, yeah. And I don't know how many times he did it. He kept on saying, "Just one more, just one more," and I'm not sure the number that he saved, but there was quite a few of them in any case, and he was he himself nearly lost his own life at the very end in doing this, and he was recognized for his bravery and his contribution to saving the lives of these other soldiers, and there was a brand new respect for this man who was a conscientious objector. And, it was a terrific, I'm not sure what the name of the movie was, but it was based on his life story, and it was quite a fantastic movie, really. I should try to look it up.
Yeah, if I remember right, he was the first conscientious objector to win a Congressional Medal of Honor.
Yes.
Or nominated for, I'm not sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nominated, like it's the Academy Awards. No.
But he did receive it too, though.
Yeah. Yeah, it was countless. He spent all night hauling these wounded soldiers, you know, down this cliff to safety. And remarkable feat.
You know, you just, when people are dedicated and to what they believe in, you know, they really do put their money where their mouth is, you know?
You know, you don't know what you have in you until you're in a situation like that.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's the meekest people that become these courageous heroes. And, you just don't know what you would do. I don't know.
Well, it's like you said, you know, you put yourself in it, or you get yourself into a situation, and it's that flight or fight reflex. You know, that you end up with.
But it's like the one we just described. That wasn't fight or flight. That was for his fellow man. It wasn't for him. Not at all.
No. But I mean, you know, other men would have run away.
Yeah.
You know?
The strength, the inner fortitude. Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, to do something like that. Yeah. Just one more.
He was magnificent, and there's all kinds of people out there like that. All right, well, let me see.
I'll share one more story if I could. There's a story of this is back when cannons were first being made. So it was before they had cast iron cannons. They made them out of these huge oak and hardwood logs. They would bore them out. They would strap them with metal straps and use them as a cannon, and put all sorts of nasty stuff in it. The idea back then was the bigger the cannon, the better. But the thing is, physics that takes over. You can't have too much powder in a contained pipe bomb without something going wrong. Investigating this township, this is back in the King Arthur days, I guess, back in the Dark Ages, they went to find the Patriots in this village, and when they got there, there was nobody there. They were all gone. Theory has it that they were built this freaking huge cannon, and everybody stood around to watch it go off, and it blew everybody up. So.
Wow.
Blew the whole town. Yeah, there was nobody there.
Yes.
I know. Careful what you go looking for.
So you must have ran into some
of
those
things
when you were working too as a firefighter.
Courageous acts of courage, you mean?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Oh yeah. First in is rescue. The second in is attack. If you're fighting like a fire, you have people inside. Sure, responsibilities and material you carry. And I was more communications than in the field, but listened to everyone. I got the dispatchers would control the TAC channels, the tactical channels. Tone them out on a county channel, then put them to a north-south division channel, a command channel, then you take them to a tactical channel, and we could monitor the action, so we would know what resources they might need, helicopters or personnel, you know, whatever they need. But, above and beyond, that's what firefighters do. They're willing to do it. There's a couple of stories just recently of a firefighter jumping in a freaking burning car and pulling a guy out. I saw the video of it. This car
wow.
is fully in vote. And he pulls this burning guy out. That's, it reestablishes a faith in humans just when you're about to give up. But what it reminds me of is back in the late 1890s, turn of the century, they had a lot of these old steam, wood-burning steam locomotives, the old school ones, right? Well, a lot of the little ones, the old iron horses, they were obsolete. So what they would do is they would run, they would get them to go as fast as they could, getting their boiler. What they would do is get the boiler heated so hot that would cause steam and that would cause the power. The hotter the boiler, the faster the trains would go. So they had this town that had a picnic to witness two of these trains on the train, local train track, to basically run head on into each other. It was a big deal. That was what they did for fun back in the day.
Holy cow!
Bought picnics, everything sort of hanging around where they figured it was going to collide. They were going to collide. Well, the report was they were like just a quarter mile from it. And the boilers, they had gotten so hot and so under pressure that the trains collided and they blew up and killed hundreds of people. They just
Holy
didn't
cow.
Realize. They were just always the old boilers. They were under pressure. They were under pressure, a lot of pressure.
Yeah,
and
it reminds me of the pressure cookers that.
Yes.
They were very scary to use because, again, some little mishap and they could explode and rip a person to shreds or, you know what I mean? Like, it's
Well, those old locomotives were just old iron horses, they called them. And these things would disintegrate. These two, for example, the story I just told, they said these two basically just rated on contact. They were so hot and so under pressure. And just white shards of shrapnel went for miles. And everybody was within that quarter mile, half mile area. That was the kill zone.
There
used to be a lot of footage of the old Super 8 movies of these trains being run at each other on a single track. You figure, well, what the hell, why were they doing that? Well, that was sort of an entertainment thing.
Just for entertainment.
Well, I guess, yeah. Why else would we do it? Got to get them off the track. Got no place to put them. Let's blow them up. Well, think about it. Without TV and racing that we've all witnessed, the god-awful wrecks and stuff, go out just out the door and get your car and you're on another track. Before then, they didn't have any of that. This is all new stuff. That's why the World's Fairs were huge. What was new in technology, the washing machines, the light bulb, the cascade mirrors, on and on. This is what was all displayed. So, two trades going at each other. Got to see this.
Hard to imagine, eh? Playing chicken with two trains.
Yeah, that was great. He's a grand idea, was that? Yeah. There's stories like that. If you go looking for them, you'll find them.
Both
townships have some bad mayors, bad people deciding these things. I know. Let's do this. Don't check with the scientists. to play with the scientists and say, no, man, you can't do that.
Now, I don't know. I think somebody was, I think it was Sweet, that reminded me that my links for the show were only the host could see
yeah.
them, but I think that's been corrected by Deborah Lee, if I'm not mistaken. But
yeah,
I
the,
put
one
my,
you, the one you had on the show page, I clicked on and it took me to where I think I wanted to be. But I'm,
okay.
But I'm admin. I would have seen it anyway, so I don't know.
Okay. So I've got mine up in the room there if you want to click on her.
Okay.
Yeah. So I wrote mine after the great emu war in Australia. Now, just before I read that, I'm going to just tell you what happened to give some people some information as to what do you mean the emu war. And it was a military operation in Australia after the First World War. Actually, it was 1932. And they had a tremendous amount of emus. They were considered pests because they had...
Well, I know where they went wrong. Lady, I know where they went wrong.
Where?
Emus can't shoot.
Emus can't shoot.
Get bad aim.
Yes. But there was, they were in, the birds were in search of water, and in their journey, they came across farmers' land that were growing wheat crops, and they were ruining the wheat crops. And so they thought, what are we going to do about these emus? And so they formed a little soldiers unit, if you will, and under the leadership of Major Meredith, and it was the Royal Australian Artillery, and they had that was in my poems, I'll tell you, but in any case, they wanted to have this call of the emus because they were destroying the crops. And so I wrote this poem, and it's called Aussie Emus. November 2nd, 1932, Royal Australian Artillery waged war on Aussie Emus. In search of better digs, water was the goal, wheat is what they stole. Major Meredith, his troops and machine guns at the ready, 10,000 rounds of ammunition to kill the thieving birdies. Marauders down under, swift of foot, dodged bullets, and soldiers shook. Emus zigzagged on red dirt at a place near Perth. Not even military trucks could keep pace. Soldiers tried to save face. A victory for the emus was declared in only 6 days. Hooray. So what happened was the soldiers were not... they were not prepared for how fast the emus could run, and they virtually could not get them with their machine guns, because they were darting back and forth, and they're very, very fast, and so ultimately they didn't. The war was won by the emus, and
Lady A. The soldiers were not into slaughtering these animals. Oh, missed.
Well, yes, I'm sure there were some that
an emu doesn't know those are bullets being fired at him to duck and bob and weave. No, he didn't know that. So
no,
interesting.
I thought it was really interesting because. Of their so quick, and they were able, like, and they zigzagged through. But there was one comment made by the colonel or whoever he was. I mean, I've lost it already. I'll try to find it. But and he was saying if he could have military troops that were as swift and fast as the emu, you know, they'd win all the wars that they were in. So it was, I think it'd be, they were quite ashamed of themselves that they couldn't call these birds.
Look at that bird. Look at that bird go.
Yeah. And I wish I had the direct quote, but I don't. Oh, yes, here it is right here. Here's what he said. Major Meredith said, if we had a military division with the bullet-carrying capacity of these birds, it would face any army in the world. They can face machine guns and the invulnerability of tanks. They are the Zulus who even dumb bullets could not stop. So it was pretty brilliant. The birds were self-sufficient and said then laughed in the face of danger. You know what I'm saying? Oh, we get another caller.
Alrighty.
Yes.
Hello.
Speaking of birds, how are
Let's
you?
See. I'm good.
What's going on, sweet pea?
I'm actually finishing up my emu poem.
Excellent. Sweet pea. Won't you dance with me?
Have you been listening to our chatter and the two poems that have been read already?
I have not, but I just dialed in. I am listening now. I was listening to a bit about the emus. I'm very excited because I am writing about the emu.
Oh, good.
Because I find this fascinating. I have not finished, so chatter on.
Okay.
This is fascinating to me. Just so that you know.
Well, thank you for writing. I'm happy that you have. And
I'm not
I
done.
The bird...
I'm pulling one of yours.
we got an update from the battlefield.
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
Go ahead with that.
New battlefield. There you go.
Okay. Do you want me to read that?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. There were claims that 986 birds were killed and a further 2,500 had died from their injuries, but word of the war on emus had spread and conservationists were not happy. In the years that followed, farmers requested assistance from the army again, but the government said no. Okay, so I did not find that fact because they basically said that there might have been a dozen birds, but that they really did not kill any. So I don't know.
Back then, false claims could spread like wildfire because they didn't have the internet. They didn't have basically working phone lines. I don't know if they could have phones, but they weren't too far away from the telegraph. So gossip could be spread. Misinformation is a deadly, deadly thing.
It is. It is, it is. So, okay, Sweet Pea, are you ready to rock and roll? Huh?
No.
Oh, you're going to tell me when you are. I won't bother you until you say you're ready to go. Just going to check the studio again. And I thought that this was a rather interesting topic, this silliness in the wars. And
today's National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day.
Ooh.
Is that what it is? Okay.
Today's Chocolate Chip Cookie Day.
National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day.
Yep. Oh,
well,
and tomorrow, it's National Underwear Day.
Oh.
And Oyster Day, a National
Oyster
Day.
Well, isn't that odd that they don't put National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day along with National Underwear Day?
Yeah,
Underwear
well,
Day.
They have.
So who in the room here is ever, you know, remember the streaking phenomenon? Who streaked?
Oh, I
can't. Not
my
me.
Husband.
No, no. Never.
You didn't? I made the
My
news.
My husband.
Twice.
Your
husband did.
Across,
in college.
No, I never did that. It's,
What did you do? Everybody does something.
What did I do? Well, what did I do? I really didn't do anything like that. I was too scared to get caught and be in trouble with the police.
Wasn't there a story about Halloween at a Hot Rod Buick or something? That was...
Well,
was
yes.
You?
Yes, it
okay.
was.
Okay.
Yes, it was. And it's... I was terrified afterwards to get caught and you know, having anything to do with police finding you. And they did find us, but I lied through my teeth, so... And, yeah. And I actually, you know, there was one other time I was in, this was, oh, no, I can't tell that story. No. And,
yeah, you can.
Well, you know, it was, I'm not proud of this because, I was, no, I really can't, I was very young. I was probably 15. And I was in, we had some friends, we had gone to the move to the drive-in theater, and was dropped off at home, and the guy that was driving the car had a few drinks. He had, like, brought beer and stuff. I was underage at the time. I was not drinking, but he was. And, after he dropped me off, he went and picked up his brother, a younger brother, and he took him for a drive in his fast car, and they went off the road and hit a culvert, and his brother was killed in the accident. And when the police were interviewing me, they wanted to know if the driver was drinking, and I lied and said he wasn't. And... Yeah. So that's not a very good story.
Oh, didn't know that.
So those are, you know, and that was probably the worst thing. I never did really anything else after that, other than your, you know, run of the mill.
I had a bad habit of being brought home on Christmas Eve during the big family party by a sheriff, deputies, me and my cousin. He did it. We didn't do anything wrong. They were just, well, why are you guys out here? Get in. Take it back home. And then, of course,
wow. Pull
up, sheriff car pull up. We pile out. We're in trouble. We didn't do anything. For some reason.
Well, there's a lot of things that we do that we're not proud of, you know, you know, I remember another time I hung around with people that were too old for me. Like, I was a young teenager, and I was hanging around with people that were 18 and 19, 17 years old. And so I found myself involved in things that weren't, you know, we got kicked out of a church once, but I think I told that story before.
Lady A at church?
Yes. And again, like, I'm sitting there like, we had been out and carrying on for the afternoon, if you know what I mean, and so the guys were all, we were all not in a condition to go to church. We probably should have gone to church for the most important reason, to get ourselves fixed up, but the guys had the leather jackets and the long hair, and you know, we were the hippie girls, and they thought there was this little tiny Baptist church where we were, and we decided to go to the evening service. And besides being brought up Catholic and being told for sure that I was going to go to hell if I darkened the door of a Protestant church, that was on my mind. But the behavior that was taking, like, they were carrying on, and the minister was quite gracious, and I just was felt horrible because I knew it was wrong. And he just invited us to take part in the service, and if we didn't, that we were welcome to leave. So we left, and that's another thing. Now, I mean, we're running of all these terrible things. I don't know why, but You know, it's funny about your conscience. You know darn well that this is wrong. At least mine did. When I was in situations, I'm thinking, like, this is so wrong. Get me out of here. I want to go home. And I found myself in not a lot like that, but similar things that you did that you knew just your upbringing, just you just knew better, you know?
Yeah, my dad was a state investigator. He was a cop. There was nothing funny about being brought home with a sheriff car.
Yeah.
He understood. It was my mom that didn't understand. But he had to go through the actions of telling, you know, making sure that I was taught my lesson, whatever I did. We didn't, me and my cousin, we didn't do anything. They just didn't let me and Danny hang out again.
Yeah.
Okay, I got to make it to the other room.
Are you leaving?
So bear with me. Just going to go to the other room. It's a deal. It's a big deal.
Okay.
But I'll make it.
Go, baby, go. You can do it.
Yep. He's our man.
You can do it.
What?
I know how. I know how it hurts. Now he's getting yelled at.
A bear just walked into a bar.
A bear just walked into a bar. And a shark said.
There he is. Whoa, we did. Gatlinburg, Tennessee. Just walked in downtown, walked into the bar. Look at a black bear. Decided he wanted a beer. And the report of the fire is where my roommate and I worked up with the rich and famous on this private lake is threatened to be evacuated right now from the fires.
Oh, no.
Wow.
Right there, we're heading to Grass Valley, yeah. Yeah, that
we
whole place would go
up.
We had
some big fires up in Columbia just recently, too. So, okay. I'm going to play Deborah Lee's voice, her SoundCloud. Where am I?
Okay.
And with her poem, I'm going to put the link for her poem in the room, though. Hang on. And where are you, Dipley? Okay, I'm going to put it in the room. And then I'm going to push play. So this is by our illustrious producer and boss lady extraordinaire, Deborah Lee, and it is called The Backside That Fueled the Battlefield and Death. Okay, back in Blog Talk, and I'm pushing the button right now. Everybody gets the tone, hopefully. There you go.
Letters to my lover, 20.
Oh, that's not the right one. Just a second.
I was going to say, Deborah, voice changed.
How come I don't have, let me see, I've got to go, okay, just talk amongst yourselves, because I think I have.
We had it, we're going to talk amongst ourselves, how's that?
What did I do here?
I see it.
The first time.
maybe she's going to read that, but it's, okay, yes, that's exactly right. Okay, so that's, this one is, by R.S. Morris. So I'm going to put that in the room instead. Okay, sorry. And we'll play that.
Which one? Okay.
I think
think Deb is going to call in. I'm pretty sure she is. Okay. So here's the one that's got the SoundCloud. There.
Okay. Got it.
Glowing Soldiers of Shiloh's Civil War by R.S. Morris. And I'm going to play that. Here we go.
Battle of Shiloh, one of the bloodiest of all. Into the river, soldiers would fall. A wound from shrapnel, a round ball. Shout, God save me, they'd call. A miracle, anything, save my leg. Look to the sky, a prayer, and beg. My wife can't see me with a peg. Bite the strap, drink from the keg. Go grab Doc Sawbone. Doc says, wait, we postpone. Look, that leg there, the bone. What the? Dunno, it's unknown. Maybe it's an angel's glow. What's gonna happen? Dunno. Wounds better, look below. Only happens by the river's flow. A mystery, everyone's confounded. Wounds heal, they're astounded. Everyone comes, now surrounded. All the soldiers, now rebounded. Legend told, for many years, angels glow, will calm your fears. By the Shiloh's River, it appears. Cool story, over some cold beers.
You know, Robert has a really, he'd be a very interesting person to sit and chat with, I think. He has a huge, a wealth of information on the Civil War, and I really like his poetry with regard to that. His rhyme in this is you know you have it perfectly in each verse, but he always tells his stories that are very emotional, I think. I thought this was really emotional, and you could hear that young soldier, you know, save my leg, save my leg. And the miracle of healing without antibiotics and all of those experience had back then. And then he closes off by saying that legend tolls for many years, angels glow, will calm your fears. By the Shiloh's River, it appears, this angel's glow. Cool story over some cold beers. You know, he's passing down historical events and happenings through his poetry, and I really quite like this. And thanks for writing in, Robert. Really appreciate it. What did you think, Hatter?
Yeah, I had to look up the references of the nematodes and the bacteria. What he says, let me get back to the page there. What he says, it only happens, let's see, so by the shadows it appears. Mystery, everyone's confounded. Wounds heal, they're astounded. It's above that. Wounds better. What it was is only in that part of the river, there is this bacteria in the water or the soil, and it would stop the infections. Back in that day, you got an arm injury, you were shot in the arm or leg, they just cut it off.
Yeah.
They didn't try to save it. So this is interesting. I didn't know.
he misses the wound from a shrapnel or a round ball. Save my leg. The Doc Sawbone. Look, that leg there, the bone. You know, it's unknown. Maybe it's an angel glow. Yeah, they didn't know what was going on. There are all sorts of legends of the Native Indians using mosses and mud and leaves of certain plants to heal wounds. So probably along that lines.
And Sweet, what did you think?
I thought it was gorgeous. Like you said, I love the way he tells history. It's raw, it's dated, it's original. I liked his whole series on the Civil War. I'm getting ready to go back to Gettysburg in October. I have a great passion for that time of history, so I have kind of a kinship with him as far as studying that part of history and how it all happened and what happened and how humans could ever be that way and how hopefully we never get that way again.
Yeah, he's a walking history book, this man, I do believe. And I think he speaks on a different level too, with regard to the Civil War. You know, because it does, no matter what they're fighting over or what they're fighting for, ultimately, soldier against soldier are trying to kill each other, and it has to. Has to stop somewhere, I guess, and it never seems to. But
well, there was no draft. They just came back. They just came through the farms and they grabbed capable young men.
Mm-hmm.
You're now in the army.
Yeah.
So most of them didn't know why they were fighting.
I'd like to have a show on the Civil War sometime, maybe. I don't know. But in any case, he does a great job, and I thank you, Robert, very much for contributing to tonight. All right. So, let me see. Deborah, I'm assuming, Crystal, we just have had her. We've all kind of done our thing. It's going to be an early night tonight, I do believe, again. Deb's got one and Sweet's got one going on. So if you can dig up some more interesting facts, Hatter, that would be kind of fun, too.
Oh, let's see. I can't remember. Most of them are total acts of bravery, where the soldier, more Congressional Medal of Honors were given to men who sacrificed their lives than were able to live through it. Some of the stories of just bravery are outstanding. I mean. I can't remember his name. There was one. He was born in Texas. He was of Mexican from a Mexican family, and he wanted to be in the army, bad. So I believe he went in early, falsified a document so he could join early. This guy, his. So he was injured by his first battle. He was injured in such a way that they kept him behind the lines. He wanted to be an Army Ranger, and you know what? It's worth such respect. I'm gonna pull it up so I'm not wrong in these facts. I don't want to be wrong, but he was given the Medal of Honor from Vietnam, and what he did
okay.
is was was cool. Okay. Okay. Come on. I see it. Boy, they have a list of the Medal of Honor recipients. So this guy was absolutely 100,000 now. Okay. I'm counting on recognizing his name. I think I can do that. Oh, come on. He was injured his first time out to where he was okay, here we go. Could you give me a minute? I'm going to find this.
Okay.
I have my poem up.
Oh, good. Let's read your poem.
All right. Yay, my poem. Yippee-ki-yay. Let's see. Here it is, the Emu War. The Emu War of 1932.
I love the picture.
Farmer's Rage. Farmer's Rage. Crops degrade. 20,000 rebels run amok. Crop fields overrun by feathered barge. Crazed rabbits join the fun. Boys, get your guns. Emus become enemies of the state. Fire, fire, fire. Dust clouds blacken the air. 2,500. Smell the gunpowder. Tread gently, soldiers, find the dead. Bury them with honors. 20,000 feathers, barbs, stare ahead and gave them an emu finger and poke.
Oh, this is excellent. I was waiting. I knew you would have something superb at the end. Isn't this hilarious? What a great piece of poetry. I love it. You can see them dashing back and forth and in and out and avoiding all those bullets. And just like I'm coughing just a sec.
I just don't know how they avoided it. They just did. Oh.
Oh, my goodness. This is so funny. I love the end of it, the enemies of the states, of the state. 20,000 feathered birds stared ahead and gave them an emu finger. Go ahead, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, one of the reasons that the farmers were so mad is they were somehow, like, from what I read, they were, like, punching holes or digging holes or something. So the rabbits were involved, too. The rabbits were going in and out, eating the crops, too. Not only were they mad at the emus, they were mad at the rabbits.
Well, there were just a bunch of people that were so angry that the animals were eating the food.
Well, it was like right after the Great Depression, too. So
yep.
They were like, they're going to eat our food. They got to kill them all. They're going to eat our food. I guess you don't eat an emu. They must not taste very good.
Well, so, I've got a tickle in my throat. Hang on a second.
Do you need an emu hatter?
I found the guy. Yeah, I found the guy.
All right.
Sorry about that. I'm just so glad to find the stone.
Um, Okay, so Heather, did you have any more?
This guy deserved a shout out. He was Master Sergeant Roy P. Benvenides, United States Army. Received the President the Congressional Medal of Honor.
What's his name?
His name is Master Sergeant Roy P. Benavides. Citation for conspicuous gallantry in the action at the risk of his own life above and beyond the call of duty. On May 2nd, 1968, Master Sergeant, then Staff Sergeant Roy P. Benvenides distinguished himself by a series of daring and extremely valorous actions while assigned to Detachment B-56, 5th Special Forces Group, Airborne, 1st Special Forces, Republic of Vietnam. On the morning of May 2nd, 1968, the 12-man Special Forces Reconnaissance Team was inserted by helicopter of the 240th Assault Helicopter Company in a dense jungle area west of Loc Nam, Vietnam, to gather intelligence. The area was controlled and routinely patrolled by the North Vietnamese Army. After a short period of time on the ground, the team met heavy enemy resistance and requested emergency extraction. Three helicopters attempted extraction but were unable to land due to intense enemy small arms and anti-aircraft fire. Sergeant Benvenides was at a forward operating base in Loc Ninh, monitoring the operation by radio when these helicopters of the 240th Assault Helicopter Company returned to offload wounded crew members and to assess aircraft damage. Sergeant Benavides voluntarily boarded a returning aircraft to assist in another extraction attempt, realizing that all the team members were either dead or wounded and unable to move to the pickup zone. He directed the aircraft to the nearby clearing, where he jumped from the hovering helicopter and ran approximately 75 meters under withering small arms fire to the crippled team. Prior to reaching the team's position, he was wounded in his right leg, face, and head. Despite these painful injuries, he took charge, repositioning the team members and directing them their fire to facilitate the landing of an extraction helicopter and the loading of wounded and dead team members. He then threw smoke canisters to direct the aircraft to the team's position. Despite his severe wounds and under intense heavy fire, he carried and dragged half of the wounded team members to the waiting aircraft. He then provided protective fire by running alongside the aircraft as it moved to pick up the remaining team members. As the enemy's fired and intensified, he hurried to recover the body and classified documents on the dead team leader. When he reached the leader's body, Sergeant Benvenides was severely wounded by small arms fire in the abdomen and grenade fragments in his back. At nearly the same moment, an aircraft pilot was mortally wounded and his helicopter crashed. Although in extremely critical condition due to his multiple wounds, Sergeant Benvenides secured the classified documents and made his way back to the wreckage, where he aided the wounded out of the overturned aircraft and gathered the stunned survivors into a defense perimeter. Under increasing enemy automatic weapons and grenade fire, he moved around the perimeter, distributing water and ammunition to his weary men, reinstilling in them the will to live and fight, facing a buildup of enemy opposition with a beleaguered team. Sergeant Benvenides mustered his strength, began calling in tactical airstrikes, and directed his fire from supporting gunships to suppress the enemy's fire, and so another extraction attempt. He was wounded again in his thigh with small arms fire while administering first aid to a wounded team member just before another extraction helicopter was able to land. His indomitable spirit kept him going as he began to ferry his comrades to the craft. On his second trip with the wounded, he was clubbed from behind by an enemy soldier in the ensuing hand-to-hand combat. He sustained additional wounds to his head and arms before killing his adversary. He then continued under devastating fire to carry the wounded to the helicopter. Upon reaching the aircraft, he spotted and killed two more enemy soldiers who were rushing the craft from an angle that prevented the aircraft door gunner from firing upon them. With little strength remaining, he made one last trip to the perimeter to ensure that all classified material had been collected or destroyed or to bring in the remaining wounded. Only then, in extremely serious conditions from numerous wounds and loss of blood, did he allow himself to be pulled into the extraction helicopter. Sergeant Bevanita's gallant choice to join voluntarily his comrades, who were in critical straits, to expose himself constantly to withering enemy fire, and his refusal to stop despite numerous severe wounds, saved the lives of at least 8 men. His fearless personal leadership, tenacity, devotion to duty, and extreme valorous actions in the face of overwhelming odds were in keeping with the highest traditions of the military service and reflect the utmost credit of him in the United States Army. Now, he thought he couldn't be nominated for these for the medals because it has to have an eyewitness. So it's like years had gone by. I don't know what exact year it was, but I think it was Ronald Reagan that gave him the awarded him the medal, found eyewitnesses to each one of those acts. Now this is what he had won. He won the Medal of Honor, Purple Heart of four with four oak leaf clusters, Defense Merit Meritorious Service Medal, the Second Meritorious Service Medal, Army Commendation Medal, an Army Achievement Medal, Army Good Conduct Medal with Silver Class of Two Loops, Army of Occupation Medal, National Defense Service Medal with one Service Star, Armed Forces Expeditionary Medal, Vietnam Service Medal with four Campaign Stars, an NCO Professional Development Ribbon, and Award Number Numeral 3, Army Service Ribbon, Army Overseas Service Ribbon, United Nations Korea Medal, the Vietnam Campaign Medal, the Presidential Unit of Citation, on and on. That's like more, a little more than half of them. This guy's a big deal. The part of the story they didn't tell was when they landed that helicopter, he climbed in. His vitals were so, his pulse was so thready that he was put in a body bag, and when he heard the zipper going up, all he could do was, he couldn't speak, couldn't open his eyes because full of blood. They didn't even recognize him. They had thought he was a wounded enemy soldier. They were zipping up the bag, and all he could do was spit, and he spit to the doc, this medic's face. And then somebody had noticed it, and he went over there and he said, "Hey, that's Ben Venudez. He's one of ours." So they almost buried him. And several years in the hospital operations from the wounds that he gathered that day. You go on YouTube and look up Roy Benvenutes, and you'll see his story. It is remarkable.
Yeah. It reminds me of that one that I was telling you about earlier, and it's Hacksaw Ridge was the place. This guy, his name was Desmond Doss. And he was a conscientious objector, and he saved 75 men without ever carrying a gun. And
that's a great movie.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? But it's based on this true story, and this guy did win the Medal of Honor as well. And Hacksaw Ridge is the Battle of Hacksaw Ridge is on an island of Okinawa.
I think he went against orders. I think at some time he went against orders. He violated orders.
Yeah. So there's more than a few good men, I'm sure. But in any case, those stories of bravery are just amazing, amazing, amazing. And we don't hear enough of them, I don't think. So I'm going to go back into did you comment on Sweet Peace, Heather?
I'm sorry, what?
Did Did you comment on Sweet Song?
I was looking up this guy's name, but that was red. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Oh, you want me to read it to you?
Yes, read it again.
It's all of like 15, 20, no, I think it's like 60 words. The Emu War of 1932. Farmers rage, crops degrade, 20,000 rebels run amok. Crop fields overrun by feathered bards. Crazed rabbits join the fun. Boys get your guns. Emus become enemies of the state. Fire, fire, fire. Dust clouds blacken the air. 2,500 shells smell the gunpowder. Tread gently, soldiers find the dead. Bury them with honors. 20,000 feathered bars stared ahead and gave them an emu finger and poke.
They didn't know emus could shoot back, huh? Yeah. Emu finger. It's a big one, too, that middle finger they got.
Yeah, it is.
That's funny.
Yeah, that was brilliant. Okay, so now we just have one more poem by Deborah Lee. I thought she might be calling him, but it's 45 minutes still left. But I think we'll call it a night after this if everybody's in agreement.
Sure.
How does everybody feel about that?
I like a boat.
Okay.
Your show.
So I'm going to put Deborah Lee's poem up in the room there.
All right.
And would you like to read it, Sweetie P?
I can do that.
And here it is.
Okay. The backside that fueled the battlefield and death. That's awesome. All right. At the buttocks battle on a coastline country, a military man drops his trousers, bending as he flashes the moon, shocking the people and the riot rousers. Then, rage explodes like a latex balloon, pricked with a pen as it burst in the den, and a big crowd of guys stir as the head spin. Outside the temple, soldiers and pilgrims rise. The fists fold tight, then the fly blackening eyes. Now the battling bodies are dropping like flies. Punching and kicking and shrinking the crews, leaving townspeople breathing the stench death bruise. Have you ever mooned the first time can be good for a good cause? And bone. That's hilarious.
It is.
This was the biggest moon. This was where they all lined up along the tracks. That's what this is.
Yes, train moon.
Now the rest of that author's notes says that the Patch Adams Full Moon Festival, 3-day event to raise money for his Gesundheit Institute and Albuquerque. 200,000 people pay $100 each to moon as a group and lend a hand with local projects. And there's a link there if you want to look at that project. And Deborah Lee, this is really great. And tongue-in-cheek and bottoms up and dropping of drawers. And it was a really... a really good poem, and I like that you put it together with this link for the Pat Adams organization that does all kinds of great stuff and projects for the people that are in those areas. So take a peek at that when you get a chance. And so, Hatter, what did you think of this poem?
I think it's very, very inventive. With the information, I'm reading some of the author's notes, the Amtrak Mass Moon. It's very interesting how that sort of caught on through the past. Yeah, the she did it very well. I thought she's becoming very, very good at line rhyme, long line rhyme.
Mm. The evolution of our writing, eh, over these last few years,
yeah.
several years, it's pretty amazing, I think. And Sweet Pea, you read
yes.
it. Let's hear from you with about Devastation.
I think it's funny. I think it's hilarious. But I got an issue. I'm not going to moon as one, let alone as a group. Just saying. But I do love this. I think it's cute. It's funny. It's everything you want it to be.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
So how about if you tell us about your show tomorrow night?
My show tomorrow night is about witches, open poetry witches, anything you want to talk about, burn them at the stake, witch, it's kind of dark and fun. That's my show tomorrow.
Witches.
Uh-huh.
Well, okay, so we can just write whatever we want about witches, right?
Mm-hmm. Or bring something or anything like that. I'm all about
okay.
it.
Sounds good. And what about you, Hatter? What's coming up with you on Friday or Saturday?
Saturday. With A.P. Taylor and Deborah Lee. The prompt for this week is Write About Nothing.
Write About Nothing. A Seinfeld episode.
A Seinfeld, yeah. We can do it. Write
About
Nothing. That's all I got. That's good. Yeah.
Well, that's quite challenging, I think. Thank you for that. And I would like to say thank you very much, Hatter, for standing beside me in this evening's festivities and providing a lot of information and fun comments. I appreciate you very much in all you do, and I very much appreciate you calling in, Sweet Pea. I enjoy your company very much. And Deborah Lee, her contribution for tonight, and Robert Morris, his contribution. And I do believe I've covered them all because we were just a tiny group with Heidi Powers. Now, somebody was going to say something.
I would just say that if we could play a song to our
yes.
outro.
Are you in the studio that you can play it? Or?
Yes, I am. And I was able to, before my scroller stopped, I got a Cyndi Lauper song, if that's okay. Cyndi Lauper.
I love Cyndi Lauper.
Okay, let me turn it down. That looks awfully high. Oh, can't play Cyndi Lauper. It's on full blast and I can't turn it down. Let's see if
oh.
I get some of those. Come on. Itch. Give me an itch. Okay. That didn't help. Okay. I think I got... Well, let me do it. Shoot. That's the rust. You're in the studio, aren't you?
In the studio. Let me see what I can find here from you.
Yeah. Oh, okay, reset. But no scroller.
It was got a lot of songs in there.
There is.
Hatter. Which one did you want,
thing,
Hatter?
How about Comfortably Numb, Pink Floyd? Can you find that? Actually,
okay.
Anyone you run across that looks good, go ahead and play.
Okay. Let's see. I love Chris Isaak's song.
Yeah, that's good.
Let's do that. Okay, I'm clicking it now.
Okay. Lady Green Room. Great show,
very much. What's that?
Great show.
Well, you were a very big part of it, and I thank you for your participation and all your information and the fun. And I will give you a call in about 2 seconds, or maybe 3.
Sounds good. Okay.
So thank you very much, and we'll see everybody tomorrow at Sweet Pea Show. Good night.
Good night.